This podcast is brought to you by On Track Studio. Okay, guys, welcome back to the Eat Like Ruby podcast. We are back today with another guest episode, which is always really cool. So today's guest is Macaulay Burke, or as he's known, Made by Mac, which is really cool. So welcome, Macaulay.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I feel very honored to be, is it the second guest?
Fourth guest.
Oh, far out.
Sorry about that.
Anymore. I'm done. No, thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
No, that's cool. So, yeah, like you said, you are the fourth guest. So we had Denver, who you're obviously super aware of.
Love Denver.
Yep. And we had Eats by M. Do you know M?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And then last week I had Charmin Vickery, who was a client of mine all of last year, and she had really good success with like some muscle gain and then some fat loss and sort of going through all the processes. So it was really cool to talk to her about actually implementing it. Like I said to her, I feel like we sort of sit here and talk about all the things people should do, but it was cool to get someone on that's actually done it.
100%. Yeah. Eats by M. I love M as well. And I'm pretty sure I know Charmin as well. So I think it's good that you get the insight from coaches and clients as well, right?
Yeah, it's really cool. So do you want to just let everybody know a little bit about like who you are, what you do?
Yeah, sure. So as Ruby said, my name is Macaulay Burke, and on Instagram I'm known as Made by Mac. I have been in the fitness or health and fitness industry for 11 plus years now, and I started as a personal trainer working in a gym and loved it, loved the whole process. And even as a younger athlete in sports, I always knew that there was I wanted that little competitive edge, something that little bit more. And the training aspect was always good. I was always really fit. But when it comes to like rugby league and stuff, I wasn't the most skillful. I had a bit of knowledge and I was fit, but I always wanted that little extra edge. So I found nutrition was something where a lot of people weren't capitalizing on. And so I really had a big focus on the nutritional aspect. And being in the industry as a PT, if you're not collectively kind of targeting everything, I feel like you aren't really giving a full service to your clients. And as a normal PT, just in the gym, doing your hours, doing your sessions, working with a whole range of clients, there was always a common denominator, and it was always, I ate so good this week and I got to Friday, Saturday, Sunday and I ate shit. And I'm like, okay. So after a couple of years, I decided to delve a little bit further into the nutritional aspects and doing my accredited sports nutritionist course with Sports Nutrition Australia. And that was a tongue twister. I almost got that messed up. So since I did that, I did that just before COVID, and it's been the best thing for me personally. I guess the big push right now for online coaching is massive, and it's kind of like what personal training was years ago. And I find that if you were just like everybody else, just doing the same stuff, you still help clients. Don't get me wrong. You still help people across the whole kind of range or the spectrum. Being able to delve further into the nutrition and cover a whole range of avenues, I could help clients a lot more, because I didn't just want to be that person who trained them, seen them leave, and then they kind of come back again, and it's just a repetitive kind of circle. So the nutritional aspect, you get to control those other factors where they're feeling shit, they're low on energy, they're having poor sleep, they've got a poor relationship with food, and they're having shit training sessions. So I guess when you're paying a service, you want to get the full range of things too. So since I've been doing that without blabbering on too much, I've been doing a lot of boxing the past couple of years. And just through one of my boxing coaches, one of his fighters last year was struggling to lose weight. And just out of nowhere, the boxing coach kind of said to me, oh, can you do his nutrition? I'm like, yeah, of course. And he was my first athlete. I knew what I was doing. Obviously, when you start something a little bit different, there's always a little bit of growing pain and a couple of things that you've got to kind of experience. But I'm a firm believer in immersing yourself in those issues and those kind of those problems front on, and learning in the process as well. But in the process of doing that, I found my passion and I found my niche. And it's something that I haven't ever had in my whole career. Like I said, just going through personal training, a bit of other things here and there. but I was always trying to find that target market. I'm like, who am I going to work with? I'm not really a female and I don't need to grow a booty, so I can't really go down that road of things. I'm not a competitor. I'm nothing of those sorts. So delving into past history of being an athlete and growing up in sport and stuff like that too, and being having a passion for boxing, I started to see common denominators with each client that I was starting to deal with, that they're constantly under-eating or coming to me under-eating, very low energy, they've struggled to make weight, and they're constantly training more and more each time. So with my first athlete, it obviously lit a fire in my belly, and then ever since then I've been, like I said, I've got the niche and I've got it down pat, I feel, at the moment, and I'm loving everything about it. So that's the kind of spectrum of things at the moment. But yeah, I'm really enjoying everything I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah, I love that. That is all so cool. I think it's awesome that you've just found your little niche. And that's pretty much why I wanted to get you on. Like, I'm really mindful that I don't want to just get 10 PT and nutritionists and have the same combo 10 times. And it's, I think it's cool. Everybody kind of brings their own little element. So for you, I was like, yeah, I just like low key watch all of your stuff. And I'm like, he's really doing something many people aren't doing, which is really cool. And I think obviously like a lot of my audience aren't competitive athletes, or some of them might be, but for the most part, like the girls I work with tend to just be, like you said, the booty builders and the gym girls, which is really cool because that's me to a T. But I think it's really interesting to kind of intertwine the two in a way that I think of females, especially, like I work with a lot of females want to look like athletes and sort of have that, you know, they have that athlete vision in their mind, but then they don't do anything that athletes are doing. Like you said, you know, we structure things in certain ways for athletes and we make sure they eat enough and they rest enough and they do all these things. And then people kind of get in their mind like, oh, I want to look fit and healthy like an athlete. So I'll get on the Stairmaster all day and I'll do like weight loss shakes and I'll do all these things. And it's like athletes aren't doing these things.
Exactly.
There's a big disconnect here. So yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the specific work with athletes, because like I said, I think there's a bit of a disconnect there. And I think people think as well that athletes just like eat healthy or they eat well. And one big thing that I really push is, you know, that sort of comes back to the thing of like, you know, eating good. And it's like, well, good for what? Like what is going to be good for you and what's going to be good for me are two different things. What's going to be good for an athlete that's making weight tomorrow versus deep in their off season and gaining strength is going to be completely different. Like, let's talk about those athletes that you work with and sort of if someone did come to you and they're in that position where, like you said, things aren't working that well, everything's not working together, how do you sort of tackle that?
So I guess like going back on what you were saying before, I do think that even though you might have clients who say females, they want to grow their booty or they want to kind of look better and tighten up and get leaner or whatever the case might be, or become stronger, I think the correlation between your Gen Pop client like that, for example, and also an athlete, there's not a massive change between the two. Like, I think the principles are still the same, right?
Yeah.
I think the difference is obviously with an athlete, they've got to be a little bit more tailored to exactly what their sport is and sport specific stuff. But I think it's the same issues that I see in both sides. More often than not, they are under eating. And it's so crazy to think, right? Because even yesterday I had a conversation with three clients and the conversations were almost identical, completely identical. They, as I said before, trying to lose weight for a fight or make weight for a fight. So in turn, they then trained more and then they then ate less. So, you know, you look at that and that's creating an energy deficit, right? Or it's trying to. You're either doing that by exercise or you're doing it by eating less. And you think, oh, well, as a normal person, you think, oh, I'm going to be losing weight, right? And that's it. I'll make weight. But in turn, as you probably see quite often too, we hear from people who are dieting so low for so long that they don't understand their body then adapts to that. And it's an interesting process and it's really hard to explain to people. But your body gets used to dieting on those low calories for so long. And it just in turn provides no energy. Your chance of getting sick, injuries, like the ramifications go on and on. And I can almost guarantee you every single one of my clients that I've started with, they all start eating more food. And when I say eating more food, it doesn't necessarily always mean more calories. It can just mean eating better food, better quality, have a better routine, better structure. So I guess going in with what you're saying, ask me about how I work with my athletes, it's always the exact same. When I do start with an athlete or they inquire, for example, we jump on a phone call, goes for as long as it needs to, and we just kind of cover more often than not the questions that I really get around is what they're eating at the moment, if it's shit, good, really, really good, and what their kind of past dieting history is. And according to those kind of results and the next couple of questions I ask them, what I try to do is then obviously allocate the correct calorie targets and macros and align that with what they're currently eating. Going forward, I ask obviously what their training's like, what their food preferences are, because I'm a real firm believer in obviously the flexible dieting background in making sure that you're giving people, let alone athletes as well, people who are normally depleting on those bad foods that you're not allowed to have and eating really clean, giving them the foods that they want because they've got higher energy demands, which means that, yes, they could get away with eating those bad foods, but it's more so also the fact that we want them hitting these calorie targets, but obviously not going over the top, right? We don't want them binging completely. Now, how do we do that? Do we give them a little bit of something that they want to be eating every day, something that makes them happy to eat that every day? And then they know they've got the rest of the diet to follow, for example. So when we go through all the foods that they like and don't like, I'll always do my best. And I'll say 99.9% of the time, I will not put a food in they don't want. But there's obviously some foods that are a little bit more beneficial, whether it be micronutrients or the macronutrients profile and at certain times of the day. But I always try to structure those questions and those answers to then replicate into a meal plan. So the last little part I'd say is obviously once we've gone through their goals and stuff like that at the start is what's their water intake like? What's their energy like? What's their sleep like? The stress levels, and then even things like hunger levels and cravings. Now, these are a main focus or a main point of all my check-ins because as you're the same, we often have clients who can come and fib a little bit and lie about how things are going, but you're the same where you could probably almost identify how someone's gone based on what their energy is like, how they're feeling, the water, all those different things we go through every single week because a lot of those things will dictate how their results go. So that's a real main point of the onboarding part that I focus on as well. And from there, pretty much, I go through all those answers that they've given me and I devise the meal plans that I'm going to provide. And more often than not with the athletes, I always give them meal plans and I always give them variety of meal plans as well, not just one. I give multiple and sometimes even weekend options depending on what they're like. And the reason why I mainly do meal plans with the athletes as well, because I know meal plans get that bad rap of being too obsessive and too strict. But when you're especially a gen pop or athlete, sometimes you want some structure. You want to know what you should be eating around this time, when, how, the quantities, the sizes. Because if you say to someone, not just giving macro targets, but you say, all right, I want you to have a high carb, moderate protein and a low fat lunch. Well, what the hell does that mean for anyone? Like what's high, what's mod, what's low? So I think giving them the structure that they can then build off. And obviously you're teaching them along the way that, all right, you've got 120 grams of chicken here, you've got 200 grams of rice, and we've got 50 grams of avocado, for example. So we've kind of nailed those things off the bat. The same thing, I'm trying to take the stress out of these athletes' equation. And if I can do that and make them stress less to hit their goals easier, that's my job. And obviously, that's why I get paid for what I'm doing. But I'm not there to just hold their hand and feed them all the food too. They're getting taught in the process. But yeah, if I was to go to an athlete who's got to make weight in 2 weeks and say, these are your macros, go and do it and come back to me, let me know how you go. I'm like, that's not going to help anybody. Your stress goes up. And something I'll touch on really quickly is a lot of those things that I ask, for example, the water intake, stress levels, sleep, a lot of these things are going to affect an athlete's weight on the scale and when they're trying to make that weight for the sport, for example. And so if we're not kind of keeping those things in tune, then we're going to have some trouble making weight, and stress is a massive factor in regards to any kind of water retention or weight on the scale as well. So yeah, I guess in a nutshell, I try and take all the guesswork out of the equation for my athletes. I try to do the absolute most, and it's probably at a detriment to me. And I often get told I should probably be charging more as well. But I'm content on, and it's, I know it sounds really tacky, but my passion is helping people. And the experiences that I went through as an athlete, struggling with certain things, I don't want to see another athlete or another Gen Pop person goes through those things. So yeah, that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's all really cool. And every, like, so many things you mentioned are things that we've spoken about in other episodes, even with the, like you said, with the tell someone to have a high carb day. Like, I spoke about that in the very first episode I did, just about getting nutrition education, because simply, like you said, saying have a high carb day, if you don't know what that means, if you don't know what it means technically, but then if you don't know what it means for you as well, like a high carb day for you and a high carb day for me, it'd be quite a different amount.
Exactly.
So I spoke straight away just about getting enough understanding and enough education to actually know what that those things mean. And then with the meal plans, Denver and I touched on that heaps, because I think in a perfect world, you know, we would teach everybody everything and they would take it all in. But like we said, people have other things in their life. They have so many stresses and other things that they need to think about. If we make this process too complicated, it's just another fucking thing that they've got to try and do. And then, like Denver and I spoke about the fact that probably more so with Gen Pop, but if we can give a meal plan and we can simplify the process and we can get a result, then we can get some sort of trust, some buy-in, and we can get the client feeling a fair bit better about themselves to then be like, okay, cool, let's start learning from here. I think if you say to someone like, I'm going to teach you everything and then the results will eventually come in 2 months. Mm. You've got a human being sitting here that's already feeling quite shitty and you're going to, you're saying like, let's work your ass off for 2 months and then you might have something to show for it.
For sure. Yeah. It's like, we're not macro coaches. We're coaches on all those aspects. Right. And like, I know when, for example, I've done coaching with Denver too, and one of the best things was the meal plan from the start. Like, for me, it was so much to build off. So yeah, it just takes so much guesswork out of it for the everyday person. And think about like some of your clients, they might be mums, they've got kids. Like, why the hell would they want to need to work out like macros right now? Like, they're here to make a change. Don't get me wrong, here to learn too, but they're not paying for a uni degree. You know what I mean? So let's just get the ball rolling. Let's build a foundation and go from there.
Yeah, 100%. And I think too, we forget that, like you said, we've done all the studies, we know all the things. Like, saying to someone like, here's your targets, plan a day completely from scratch can be so overwhelming if you don't know what you're doing. And that's where I think meal plans can be awesome, because it's like, here's a meal plan, follow it for a while if you want to, or log the whole thing and then have a play around with mixing up the dinner. And then that's, I think that is so different compared to just saying plan your own day. If somebody has to plan their complete own day based off targets, it's like, where do I even start? So I think a meal plan can be such a good base. And then it's like I said, you can follow it for a while, or it's like, let's practice subbing a meal out, subbing in something else. Let's practice mixing up the breakfast, like whatever it is. But, and then I think too, people start to really see the plan and understand portion sizes, understand what we're actually trying to do. So then when it comes to planning their own day, it makes a bit more sense. They've got quite a visual of it. And I think athletes are the same.
For sure. I think one of the biggest things, like you were saying just then as well, is like when you first speak to a client or onboard a client or a client inquires, however it is, I think one of the biggest things that I've learned the past couple months, the past couple years, is if you just give a plan based on what their needs and wants are, that's one thing. But I think you need to like kind of preempt, and one of the biggest things is what are your obstacles? What are your barriers that we're going to face? Because the perfect meal plan can be perfect until the perfect plan goes out the window. So I think it's a massive thing, especially for Gen Pop. You know, you might forget to prep your food, you know, and yeah, all right, you should have done better. But if you're at work and you got to go to the cafe to eat, and for example, a meal plan is going to give you that guide, right? And it's like, all right, you got chicken wraps for lunch. You can go and replicate that. But in time, we've got to kind of work around, all right, if this happens, this is what we can do. And if you're in this situation, contact me, let me know. Obviously, down the track, I'm not saying meal plans are the only thing. You do want to kind of get into the phase of not having to use meal plans. But like I said, I think for what I do, I'm content with, especially the athletes, knowing when meals are most appropriate. And again, meal timing, you know, those kind of things are normally on the back burner of in the order of things. But I think for athletes, it can be one of the most beneficial things especially if they've got 2-3 sessions a day, for example, and you're giving them, for example, a high fat and high fiber meal before they train, well, it's probably not going to go down too well. So that's where we kind of allocate certain kind of higher carbohydrate meals that'll assist with their training sessions as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think it, like I say this in every episode, but it always just comes back to the education and sort of knowing what it is for you. Like you said, for an athlete, nutrient timing is quite important. And then, you know, like we said, for a busy mum, maybe super simple meals are quite important. Yeah. And it's really just about gaining that overall education and understanding of nutrition and then really pivoting like, okay, what applies to me and how do I apply it to me and how do I make it work for me? Mm-hmm. And I think it's really cool to hear it from, yeah, from that athlete perspective.
Yeah.
You kind of already, I feel like you've kind of already touched on this, but we could probably explain it a little bit more. Obviously, you work a lot with fighters who have to make weight and usually have to drop a bit of weight. Why would we not want that person to then just sit at that weight all the time? If somebody could just go strict diet, low calories, be super lean, super light, why do you not want them just sitting there all the time?
Like it's that's what a lot of people do think. And I think even, like I said, I'm dealing with amateurs. I'm not really working with kind of any pros at the moment, just as a like kind of disclaimer. But you kind of look at it in the sense of an athlete can be sitting around their fight weight. And we kind of work on percentages as well based on timelines. There's a lot of different variables. But to be sitting on such low calories year round, and it's kind of the same as, in a different sense, but a lot of females focus on those lower calorie targets and bikini competitors focus on those lower calorie targets year round and try to stay lean all year round. And more often than not, we're leading to phases where we go into low energy availability. We're going to phase where we're getting injured, we're hungry, we're binge eating. Like, and again, for females, for example, can go into a phase of losing their period, for example. Males can actually have lower testosterone. But pretty much, if you could think of the flu in a nutshell is almost like what low energy availability is.
I love it's that.
Like, yeah, you're like, you're stuffed, right? So with training, and these guys, like I said, are doing maybe 2 sessions a day, for them to be on such low calories, which in turn would mean low carbohydrates, they're going to have very to little energy to perform. So what we try and do is, because they're in a highly glycolytic sport, we're trying to make sure they're in higher carbohydrate demands. And again, we're utilizing those around training time specifically. Now, people might see on my Instagram that a lot of it might be bagels, crumpets, pikelets, like all the good shit. See, you're smiling too. It gets you excited. Nutella, all those things, right? And people think that's all I do. I just give people those foods, but it's not the case. Like the meals aside from that, they might not look as sexy. They might not look as appealing, but it's just nailing the basics in those other meals as well to get these guys into higher carbohydrate demands. And it can be daunting for people. And my disclaimer when they do start with me as well is that understanding carbohydrates and how glycogen works and stuff like that, that when we do increase carbohydrate intake, it can lead to an increase in weight on the scale initially. Remembering that if your listeners haven't been informed yet, but like most of the glycogen will result in about 2 to 4 grams stored with water as well. So it's going to increase weight on the scale. So without diving into that too much, people can freak out in the first couple of days from higher volume, higher carbohydrates. But I normally say to them, those first 1 to 3 days following the plan, don't worry about the scale. You don't need to jump on the scale for even, I'd almost say the first 2 weeks. But those first 3 days, sometimes they're like, oh, this is a lot of food. I don't know if I can get this in. And I'm like, trust me, just do your best. Day 4, day 5, day 6, everything balances out. Your body gets used to the process. And the results every single time are that pre-workout meal was amazing. I felt amazing. Far out, I'm having better sleep. I'm stressing less. People were asking me how amazing this food is. How am I losing weight? And every time people lose weight after the first couple of weeks, and as you know, a lot of that's water balance and stuff like that too. Going back to the question is that like these guys need to be in higher energy demands, and it doesn't mean that they're fat. They're not overweight. Yes, they're overweight in the category of sports, but the best thing about that is that when they come into fight week, that's when we manipulate those things to help them make weight a little bit easier. So that's when we reduce things like their water intake, their sodium, their carbohydrates, their fiber. There's certain factors there that we kind of focus on, and we just flip the script. So they go from a high carbohydrate with possibly a lower fat intake, and we swap them right around. So the energy demands are almost met exactly. So if you've got a person who's on, for example, 2,000 calories, in fight week, they could still be on 2,000 calories. There might be a smaller deficit. We're not trying to lose fat. We're trying to actually lose water weight in the body and deplete the body and dehydrate it slightly. Again, you need to be doing this with a professional, I believe, because it is quite dangerous. These guys need carbohydrates. And you speak to any athlete, and I'm not going to name any names, but we had a couple of athletes come out saying they went like, they went plant-based and they went vegan and stuff like that, which is completely fine, right? And low carbohydrate, and they fasted. And a lot of them backtracked after certain documentaries came out and stuff like that too. But it's just not the best approach for an athlete who's in those high glycolytic demanding sports to be reducing carbohydrates. And yes, your walk around weight will be lower. It will. But then your depletion the week of fight week, for example, won't be as high. Your training demands won't be as good. And all those flu-like symptoms I spoke about earlier are pretty much common year-round as well. And it's they go through phases. So introducing carbohydrates is the massive thing. Yes, they're going to be heavier year-round. But again, it leads to more manipulation that in that kind of those last kind of phases.
Yeah, for sure. I think that was all so spot on, and like my mind was just reeling. Like,
sorry, I've got a tendency when I start talking about something, I just go, and then I just kind of rotate around.
No, it's awesome. It's really cool because I think so much of it can come back to the sort of gym-based girls that I like to work with and that are probably listening. And I did an episode about this a few weeks ago where I spoke about toning, like the sort of the episode was about like the concept of toning, and we spoke about how it's almost a cock block for girls to be adamant on seeing a certain number on the scale if they do have goals of like muscle growth, booty growth, like hitting PBs in the gym, being like, you know, a boss in the gym. But then it's this fixation with this number on the scale is really stopping them from like sending it with those goals. And that's where so much of what you just said can relate, because it's like, yes, technically the scale might go up, but it is glycogen, it is water weight, it is all of these things. You're not getting fatter. You're not gaining body fat. And if anything, you're actually looking better. Like a girl in that position can look a lot better when she's like eating high enough food, full muscles, hitting big weights in the gym. You start to actually look toned as opposed to constantly reverting back to that deficit, wanting to see the low number on the scale and kind of keeping really like skinny and scrawny because you're not embracing like that next phase. So I think it's so relatable in that sense.
Yeah. Even like I remember, like I still work with Gen Pop clients too. And I still have a lot of female clients, and a lot of the time that is the case, right? But I think it's important to establish, well, what is your exact goal, or what is your most prioritized goal? Like, is it to lose weight on the scale, or is it to lose measurements? Is it to lose body fat? Like, I think that's really important. And this always happens, right? You've probably got clients too, where they're like, I'm 85 kilos now, I want to be 80. And the first question is, why do you want to be 80? Because that's what I was 5 years ago when I looked my best. Okay, that's fine. But you're now 5 years older. You now have two kids. You now have a stressful job. You have all these other factors. Why does 80 need to be the goal? Why can't we possibly focus on our measurements? And you could stay at 84, 83 kilos, but look better than you did at 80.
Yeah.
So I think, again, it's that kind of culture and the basis of things. I'm not like the biggest loser, but like things where it was all about losing weight on the scale. And even though these guys, my athletes, have to compete in weight category sports, it's still the same, right? Like when they first start, they shouldn't be chasing weight loss initially. We've got different phases according to when their fight is, for example. Now, more often than not, we try to distinguish those things. We don't want a guy coming in, or a female, come into 4 weeks out from their fight and, for example, they're trying to increase their performance to a T, because that's a whole different phase. We should be focusing on those skillful aspects in the first 4 weeks. But then the mindset again is, I should be dropping weight. I should be dropping weight. No, understand that at this point in time, we're trying to fuel your performance. We're trying to build up all your glycogen stores. and then go through the next phase. So I think the Gen Pop client's the exact same, and it's just important to establish what are your goals, what is your priority, and how are we going to approach that?
Yeah, I think that is so spot on. That's another thing I've spoken about in so many episodes is, like, again, that number being a goal. And it's like you said, why that number? And people, you know, because I want to look better and I want to feel better. And then it's like, okay, so the actual goal is to look better and feel better. Like that's right. Their goal. And then, you know, the scale is a whole nother topic. I get into it every, I get into that every week. But I think exactly like you said, and it ties in so well with everything we've said and everything I've said in other episodes, is when we do have that goal of focusing on performance, we do want to take that step away from like the scale and obsessing over body fat and measurements and all those things, because it's just not the time to prioritize it. Like, we want to have times where fat loss is the focus and we absolutely go for that, knowing performance might take a little bit of a hit, and then we're over here focusing on performance at another time, knowing that we're not watching for fat loss every week. And I've heard Tyson say it in the past, and I've said it on here, it's almost like that chasing two rabbits concept, where people, like with athletes, it's sort of like body comp performance, body comp performance, and then with gym girls or anyone in the gym, it's that same sort of thing of like muscle gain, fat loss, muscle gain, fat loss. Yeah. And then 100%. It almost ties into the whole low energy availability thing and stuff, because I see so often with gym girls that it is a bit of a loop where it's like dieting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, trying to train hard but can't train that hard because I am dieting, start to fall off track Thursday and Friday because I'm getting hungry because I'm trying to train hard. By the time the weekend comes around, it's a shit show. We start again with fat loss on Monday, and we end up in that loop where, I've said it so many times on this podcast, but we end up in this loop where we're like kind of dieting for fat loss, kind of training well, kind of eating in a surplus, kind of coming back to fat loss, and everything is getting like kind of worked on, but nothing is getting optimized. There's no like definite optimal fat loss phase, definite optimal performance phase. And I think that's where a lot of people can spin their wheels, whether it be an athlete with performance or whether it be just a gem pop person that does have gym goals.
Yeah, I think you're 100% on the money there. And, you know, you've probably been in the same phase. It can be daunting, like, especially I could imagine for a female who's going through a gaining phase, right? Like, after a couple of weeks, not just weight on the scale, for example, like, it's a fucking hard process. Like, sorry to swear, I don't know
if that's fine.
But, like, it can be daunting because you're doing something you've never done before. But that's why having a coach and someone to reassure you that, well, this was your goal, this is what you want to do, and this is how we're going to get there. Unfortunately, you need to remind yourself, what is the purpose? What's the reasoning behind what you want to do? I think it's a massive thing. That's why I feel the accountability aspect and adherence kind of side of things with a coach is massive, because we have battles with our head every day, whether it be about our physical, on what our weight is on the scale, or what we're eating, whatever it is. And, you know, like I say, sometimes we're a part-time counselor, part-time psychologist, all those things. It's all a part of the job. I love it, right? But it's important to have someone to reflect on, because you go to your partner and you say, oh, I've put on a little bit of weight. Like, do you think I've gained fat? And they're like, and if they say, yeah, you're like, are you serious? So I think having an unbiased perspective, someone who's guiding you on the right path, who knows what they're doing, it goes a long way just to put the mind at ease a little bit and remind you what the goal is.
Yeah, 100%. We've spoken about that heaps as well. Like, I've done those cycles of muscle gain and fat loss and everything, and at the peak of a gaining phase, been around, say, like 68 kilos, and then my sort of lean lightweight is like 56. So to be a female and put on 12 kilos, I'm not very good at maths, but that's quite a big percentage of my body weight. Like, that's a very big shift. So like you said, it's daunting. Like, we're not just out here saying, yeah, pack on 12 kilos and feel great about it. And, you know, it's probably a whole nother topic, but we do it with structure and we do it with all of the things.
I think that you're like a real prime example, because obviously we've followed each other for a while on social media, but you're the prime example of someone who you go through the phases, but you commit to them, right? You go through maintenance, you go through deficits, you go through surpluses. But every single time, like if you look at the progress photos, you're consistently hitting numbers, you're consistently on track every time. And those progress shots that you show, they're the byproduct of all your hard work. So I think like you lead the way in that sense. And it is hard to be 100% consistent, right? Like we are lucky in a way. This is what we do for work. We can probably calculate, like you'd be the same. You look at a thing of food and you're like, that's about 500 calories, right? Well, that's about that. It's just like you're like a computer. But we also understand how hard it can be for the everyday person that you're not doing this every day. You don't know a lot of this stuff as well. So, yeah, I think that you've been a prime example of that, though, like of it's good to see someone stick to a program. And, for example, a male could be they really struggle to go into a fat loss phase as much, whereas a female struggles to go more so into a surplus. A bloke doesn't want to look not bulky and a female doesn't want to look a little bit bigger. And it's just how it works, right? But I think the mental side of things, it's massive that to, again, just go back, why am I doing this? Am I just doing it for the sake of it? Well, fuck, I'm not going to do it any longer. Let's get over it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think you've been a prime example.
Yeah, thank you. I think that, again, comes back to where education and everything is key, because I'll always say to people, like, even though, yes, I have had those phases of putting on weight and everything, I was never a victim to weight gain. And that's a very different thing. It's a very different mindset shift. It's a very different process. If you feel like you're putting on 12 kilos and you didn't want to and you don't know why and you don't know what the fuck's going on and you feel like shit, that's a very different thing to intentionally setting out saying, I'm going to do a gaining phase and I'm going to be fairly consistent. Like, little side note, but when I am in a gaining phase, I obviously am a little bit more flexible. I have a meal out on the weekend, all of those things. Mm. But for the most part, it is quite structured and, you know, we look at everything every week. And I'll even say to my girls that go into a gaining phase, I'm not going to let you stack on kg after kg after kg every week until I intervene. The whole point of nutrition education and understanding and everything is that we assess and we adjust. So if you're packing on body fat in a way we don't want and you're getting uncomfortable, we're going to change the plan. It's not just correct. So coming back to that original point, it's even though it can have discomfort and, you know, it can be hard at times, I think it's a very big difference when you're educated and you're understanding and the whole thing is intentional, as opposed to just being a victim to the scale, like getting on the scale, being like, I don't know why it's going up. When we're in this position, it's like, well, yeah, I do, because I'm in a gaining phase.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, just to jump on this really quickly, that's why communication and check-ins are so important, like to be able to nail what we're trying to target, but also look at things that are side notes. Like I said, your stress levels, your water, those energy aspects, like all those little one percenters that can help define how we're going. And I think, like you said as well, it's important that people do need to kind of build up that trust in you as well, right? And you're not going to make them gain stacks and stacks of fat. There's a purpose behind it, but that's where we need that honesty from the client as well. And when I know I'm not, and I don't think you are, because you seem like a good person, I'm not going to throw you off if you fuck up. I'm going to help you navigate around that barrier. Some of your clients might be like, no, she's not like that. But no, it's just like, it's, you're a human being, right? You made a mistake. Let's fix it up. Let's get back on track.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I always say to my girls, and anyone listening would have heard me say this, like, is there is no right or wrong. And I even said this to a client yesterday who is sort of edging into a gaining phase. She doesn't want to fully go for it, but she's sort of practicing it, which is really cool. And I said to her, like, there is absolutely no right or wrong here. If you want to go balls to the wall gaining phase, we can, so long as you're understanding, aware, and accepting of what that's going to mean. It's going to mean weight gain. It's going to mean feeling uncomfortable, whatever. If you want to scale it back and, you know, dabble in that high end of maintenance and slowly push some gains that way, we can. So long as, again, you're understanding, aware, and accepting of, we might not get as many muscle gains as we would if we did an extreme gaining phase. So there's absolutely no right or wrong. It's like we said before, you're sort of coming back to the individual and saying, what's going to be best for you? Like, what is the goal? What is the number one priority? What are we willing to endure? What are we not willing to endure is still a really great question as well. And then how do we formulate the plan then to actually suit you and the goal? And there will always be like a little bit of discomfort or whatever, but like we said, it's finding that sweet spot.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and like, communication's key, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
For sure. And then kind of on that note, like, I feel like we've gone in so many directions, but it's really cool that we sort of spoke about that with all the gym girls and everything, because one thing that I've set out for myself to do this year, like, I have done that consistent cycle of muscle gain and fat loss for like 3 years now. And this whole year, I've set the plan to literally just sit at, like, quote, maintenance, as we call it, but I've kind of taken that maintenance phase and rebranded it as performance. So it's like, I'm going to spend the whole year focusing on performance. Like, is there enough energy coming in to train? Is there good energy coming in to recover, to sleep, to enjoy flexibility, but to still feel good in my body? Really finding that sweet spot. Like, it's awesome to have those intentional fat loss phases, those intentional muscle gain phases. But I think a lot of people then too think, like, I have to be in one or the other. What phase am I in? And I've, like, been saying to my girls, like, it's awesome to have those goals. If we've got a fat loss goal, let's send it. If we've got a muscle gain goal, let's send it. But we've also got a life to live. And if you want to literally just enjoy your training, enjoy your nutrition, feel good in your body and enjoy your life, there's a nice big sweet spot here. And even with that, I think, not to get too off topic, but some people struggle with that too. For a lot of people, it's like, I can kill it when I've got a clear fat loss goal in sight. I can kill it when I've got this clear muscle gain goal in sight. And if I'm just sort of hanging in the middle, people actually need more help with that than they think.
Agreed. Yeah. I think maintenance is a hard period to work with, because if you're going into a fat loss phase, for example, you obviously, you might have measures where you're tracking, for example, weight on the scale and measurements as well, and photos, right? And the same in a surplus, you're doing those same things. When you're at maintenance, it's like, all right, well, the scale could go a little bit up and the measurements might go a little bit down. Like, it can go either or and it can balance, right? I think it's important to understand that, again, daily and weekly fluctuations are going to happen on the scale. Consistency with foods, a massive thing too. But, like, maintenance is the best period, I believe. And with the athletes, for example, depending on their phase of training, more often than not, they're sitting at maintenance calories according to what their energy demands are, right? And the same as your females and all your clients too, because maintenance isn't a point of, we obviously don't want to lose weight. It's good that you put it in the aspect of performance, right? I like that, because it's helping you perform. It's giving you the fuel to perform. If you were giving it too much, then you're going into a surplus. If you're not giving enough, you're going into a deficit. So I think by changing that little word around for a lot of people, it might clarify a little bit. And I think it's important probably as a coach then to give them performance targets, not just give them a name for performance calories, right? And it's I know it sounds like common sense, but I think I think that's a really good kind of outlook to have on things. But yeah, with my athletes, it's the same. Like, how do you expect to perform better when you're not giving your body enough fuel? And I know I touched on this earlier as well, but, like, so many people are constantly chasing weight loss, gen pop, athletes, either or and both. But then they're wondering why their training sucks. They're wondering why they're not getting any good training adaptations. They're not improving their cardio. They're struggling with their sparring sessions, and the females can't lift an 80-kilo squat, for example, for more than 5 reps. And they're like, I've been doing this for so long and it's just not doing anything. All right, well, let's give your body a little bit more food. Let's push that. But again, like, it comes back to, well, is the goal to lift heavier or is it to lose weight? Like, it's important. You need to kind of revisit that quite often and put people's mind at ease. But, like, maintenance calories or meeting people's energy availability demands for athletes, it's massive. And the benefits when people feel it and they hit those performance targets, man, that's like that makes me happier than anything else. Like, I love when someone says to me, that food was amazing. You helped me lose this weight. I wouldn't have performed this good without you. But when someone kind of comes back and says, I just had the best session I've done and that bagel before the session was amazing. And then at the end of the week, they're like, I've had a perfect week. I've actually maintained my weight, for example. I'm feeling good. People are complimenting me. I'm like, that is a perfect week. And that's, to me, is fully fueling the athlete without having to drop weight or increase weight, right? But performance, it's massive.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why I was really intentional about saying to people, like, let's change this wording, because I think a lot of people I was seeing with a lot of girls, if we were to go to maintenance, I think it was almost forming this thing in their mind of, like, why would I bust my ass with nutrition training, whatever? Like, I feel like I'm still doing the work to stand still. And I think that was coming from the idea that progress begins and ends with body composition. So it was like, well, if I'm putting in all this work and my body comp's still going to be the same, like, what's the fucking point? And it's like, I think that's where we need to step back and be like, well, there are so many ways we can progress. Obviously, like we said, with the obvious things, with performance, lifting heavier weights, running faster, doing all of those things. But even like the things you've touched on with like mood, sleep, stress, libido, all of that. But even I think in the sense of like, can I go out for dinner with my partner and not think twice about it? Get back on track with my food the next day, not really freak out, what the fuck's the scale going to do? Shit, this wasn't in the plan, all of those things. Like we have to, I think, step back and look at progress as so many, like there's so many aspects to it. And one thing somebody said to me, like when I first brought this in towards the end of last year, I was talking to a girl about it and she said to me, a really cool question is to ask, like, you know, people don't want to see the scale go up. So if we do increase food or we do loosen the reins or whatever, and people have that freak out about the scale going up, for so many females, it's like 1 or 2 kilos and it's the end of the world. And somebody said to me, like, the question of what else am I gaining? And I was like, fuck, that's such a great question, because it's like all those things we just said, like, yeah, maybe I have, like, you know, air quotes, gained 2 kilos. Like we spoke about, it's probably not even body fat. But I've also gained way more energy, way better sleep, way better flexibility with my meals, can eat with my partner. Like my partner's 110 kilos. If I'm in a deficit all the time, we're not eating the same meals. So it's like that question of what else am I gaining? It's like, yeah, maybe 2 kilos came with it, but what else has come with it? And as a little side note, and I've definitely said this on the podcast before, but coming back to our thing before about the scale, sometimes, yes, I've gained 2 kilos, but the thing I've gained as well is a better body composition. Like I look better, I look more toned, I look more athletic, whatever it is. If we can detach from that number and ask what else am I gaining, there's so many things that can progress.
I keep going back, but like, yeah, you changing that word, like we always hear about maintenance calories and people kind of think like, and I know I've done this in the past, I think when I first worked with Denver, when you hear maintenance calories, sometimes you think, I can eat whatever I want. I've got full flexibility now. I'm fucking off the chain. But it's changing that word from maintenance performance, because if you change that mindset with someone that you're on higher calories now to maintain, then again, that whole mindset is about just maintaining. Yeah, maintaining weight on the scale. But as soon as you put a performance kind of word in front of it, one of the things I say to all my clients, and I know it sounds really tacky, but food is fuel. And if you start changing that mindset as well, obviously athletes are one thing, but for example, your clients are the exact same, right? If you then tell them that what they're eating is going to assist their performance, then that's a whole different mindset to go about it. And yeah, we haven't touched on the social aspect of those kind of things like you said, but the social aspects are massive. Like, all right, you went out and had a burger. Are you going to jump on the scale? Like, why would jumping on the scale the next day be a good idea? Like, there's no reason to. What I'd say to you is, all right, well, when you go into the gym the next day, not like a hustle mentality or hustle culture, but go in and fucking use that burger as energy. Yep. Go in and don't try and train the burger off. Look at it from the other perspective. It's fueling what you're doing now. So a lot of people always look at food and think, I need to burn this off instead. And it's a whole, I'm not saying it's the wrong mindset. That's how some people look at things. But I honestly would say, go in and work. Work for that and don't work it off. Just utilize it and use it a bit more so. So I think that's really important, but I actually really do like the terminology, because it does, especially I'm sure for the girls, like you said, if they gain weight a kilo or two on the scale, it can be the difference between having a shit day and a good day, right? And everyone's the same. Blokes are the same too. Even the athletes are the same. Like I said, they're weight category targeted. So if things aren't going the way it's pending, that it should be, then the whole world crumbles.
Yeah.
And have a fighter who might binge. He might go and go for an extra run, or she might go for an extra run to try and burn off those extra kilos. But again, like, there's so many factors that come down to weight on the scale. And if these guys weren't, like a lot of my Gen Pop measurements and photos, and unless they've got a weight-specific target, sometimes I tell them we don't need to weigh ourselves, because I just think there's too much power on the scale and it just doesn't correlate to the benefits. Like you said, 1 or 2 kilos, could mean an extra 10 kilos on a squat, for example. And so, like, you got to look at it and say, was that 1 to 2 kilo? Is that going to ruin what I'm trying to do? Or is it assisting with me actually feeling better and performing better? And without harping on about it, it's the biggest thing with athletes. Like, they're all under eating. Like, a lot of them that come to me are under eating. And it's crazy when you hear the response on eating a little bit more food, what it does for their performance and just everyday life. I think females get a lot of pressure from social media and stuff like that too. And I was thinking about it the other day. I really do feel for a lot of girls with Instagram, because, like, it's kind of, you know what? It's kind of like athletes, right? People in sports get tested for drugs and performance enhancers and stuff, right? And you got some people who play on the level playing field, and they might not be as good, and they look at the champion, and it comes out the champion's been on testosterone for 2 years, right? And he gets done. Social media is the same kind of thing. Like, we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people of the same type, whether it's females or males, and it's like, it's not a level playing field. These people are getting paid to do what they're doing, for example, or they're using performance enhancers, they're getting surgeries done to make themselves look better. So it's a hard disconnection. Like, I know that goes quite deep, but, like, mentally it can fuck a lot of people around. And I know a lot of males and females that suffer that, and I've suffered in the past too. But I think when you start kind of disconnecting from that as much and not comparing yourself to those people and realizing again, like, your goal is your goal. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. Your situation is completely unique to you and everyone else around you. People can experience the same things and have the same kind of things going on in their life, but your situation's different. You wake up at a different second than someone else. You have a different amount of cells in your body than someone else. Like, everything is so different. And it's just, I think that's a big thing, like, that I wanted to get on here and say today, that don't feel pressured by the social media pressures of those things, and just do what you want to do. I know that went a little bit left field there, but it's something I kind of wanted to touch on there.
No, that's fine. I love it. That's really cool. Even like you said with the weight thing, like, you don't have a lot of people taking weight. I haven't really taken my weight all year either. And just based on everything that we've said, like, the goal for me is not a weight-based goal. So if getting on and I think I said this on the last podcast, but my sort of my theory is, like, you know, people will sort of say, like, when I hit a certain weight, like, I feel good in this outfit, or I feel good at the beach, or I feel good in the mirror or whatever. For me, it was always like gym shorts, like booty shorts. Like, when I start to get down around the 60s, I feel really good in gym shorts or whatever. So I'm literally just saying to myself every day, do I feel good in these shorts? Yes. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Let's go. If I don't, do I need to tighten things up a little bit? Yeah. Or do I need to buy bigger shorts? Am I okay with this? Like, but I think it's almost like I've said before, the weight is like the middleman. So, like we said, if the goal is to look and feel a certain way, does that have to correlate to a certain number? So I think that's just important to touch on too. Like, I don't take weight.
No, it's a powerful measure, very powerful. Once you get into the process of understanding it, that there is so many variables and there's trade-offs, it's pretty empowering when you don't get too attached to the weight on the scale.
Yeah, and I spoke to a client yesterday actually who had been through a fair bit with the scale in the past, and I said to her, and just for anyone listening, if this resonates with you, like, especially I think for, like, our parents and those generations before that, it was literally like scale goes down good, scale goes up bad, the end. Like, that is where it would begin and end. So if anybody thinks that way, it's so normal. Like, we were all kind of, like, you know, quote, taught that forever. So it is not just something that we wake up and be like, oh, I'm suddenly fine with this. Yeah. Like, it's been ingrained in most people since day one.
Exactly. It's funny you say that, and you might have a question for me around about something like this maybe, and I'm just going to get on the front foot. I now deal with boxing coaches who are so, I'll say backwards, because they're not up to date with the science at the moment in regards to weight loss and how it works and nutrition. But the past year, I've been constantly dealing with coaches who ran 10 kilometers a day, ate nothing. And like you said, it's that old school mentality where our parents, if the scale went down and we're trying to lose weight, good job. If it went up, come on, fatty, let's get losing some weight, you know. But, like, they're these boxing coaches are the same. And I think that's what got drawn me into working with this boxer at the start, is that, like, once I went to one tournament with him and I helped him, I remember he'd done a, well, down in Adelaide, and he won this tournament, but he had to weigh in every single day. And I went down there and completely gave him all his food post weigh-in every single day. So for the 2 days that I was there, he'd weigh in and I'd be there straight away, and not to delve into too much, but like loaded him up with carbohydrates. So like, I won't give the whole science behind it, but I had pikelets, I had bananas, I had maple syrup, I had, all the good stuff you can think of pretty much. I gave him his fluids and stuff like that. And I'm sitting there with a Woolworths bag and I'm with like the New South Wales team, and they're all kind of looking at me and they're like, are they pikelets? And like, is Harris, is he going to eat pikelets? And I'm like, yeah, there's like Milo bars and Nutella too. And they're like, what? And like, and then so he comes off the scale, I give him the food and he's like, oh, thank God. And he's eating and everyone's just like staring at him like, you can't do that. You can't do that. And the same thing happened the next day. And it's funny, like his coaches didn't really, not in any direct way, but they didn't communicate with me a lot because they probably had their own set ways and they normally do push the athlete down that path. But as I said, like things are changing and I'm thankful that this is my field now, right? Because I'm an outlier at the moment and there's a couple others that are really leading the way. Like I love Jordy Sullivan, the fight dietitian, like everything they're doing there is everything I'm kind of doing now, and they're like big idols of mine. But like just showing people how they can be eating this food to feel better or to make weight easier. It's not what we've been taught to believe growing up, and I guess not what we see on social media or through celebs losing weight for a role and stuff like that. You know, there's a lot more science behind it aside from just starving yourself and training more.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's such a good spot to wrap up probably. And it really comes back to what we just said before of like education being key, because like you said, those people are probably just looking and saying like, well, that's not good or that's not right. And that's where we bring in that question of like, well, good for what? What are we trying to achieve here? And like we said, good nutrition in that instance would be different to good nutrition the day before the weigh-in or good nutrition in the off season. Good nutrition for somebody like me versus somebody that's about to do a fight. Like it's going to be totally different. And I posted that in my Facebook group the other day. Like I said to girls, like what's right for a person who's running a marathon today is going to be very different to a person who's planning on sitting on the couch all day. So we've just got to be more open-minded to that whole, like, this is good. I'm being good. When I do this, it's good. We really need to dig a little deeper and sort of see like good for what.
Yeah. Can I touch on that? My marathon experience could be.
Yeah, right.
So with my marathon experience, I was obviously doing a lot of training, right? 5 days a week. And when I was a couple of weeks out, I started thinking to myself, I need to be lighter to run better, right? And so I actually fell into the trap of like, I'm working with athletes and I fell into the trap of wanting to lose weight to think that it would make me run better. So in turn, I dropped my calories and I've done the exact same thing. I overtrained according to what my demands were. My ankles were killing me. My feet were stuffed. I was just, everything was aching. I was hungry all the time. I'd get ravenous after like a massive day of training. And yeah, the weight went down on the scale, but I wasn't running better because I wasn't fueling my performance. So my runs got harder. My times completely stagnated. Like they plateaued massively. And I'm like, fuck, why am I not dropping? Like, why aren't I running better times? And like, I literally had to pinch myself when I seen speaking to a client. I'm like, I'm doing exactly what I say not to do. So, but again, like, you got to experience that, right? To understand. So, I think if I could give any tip to any of your girls or any of your clients or anyone who's listening here, that if you constantly feel like you're in that phase of trying to lose weight, and then after 4 weeks, you're like, oh, I'm going to gain a little bit more. And like we've all been there where we cycle through our goals and what we want to achieve and what we want to do. But I think it's really important to stick to one thing and try it out. And again, if it's anything, I'd say try a longer period of maintenance. It doesn't have to be a year. It can be 6 months. It can be 3 months. Try and eat more carbohydrates to fuel your training. Try and hit higher calorie targets to fuel your training. That's my biggest tip, because you'll feel better up here. You'll feel better in the gym. Fuck the weight. Don't worry about the weight on the scale. Based on how you feel and how you look, I can guarantee you'll feel a lot better and you'll perform a lot better.
I love this. You literally basically just plugged Eat Like Ruby. Like, I think you're... this episode should come out sort of towards the end of Feb, and we are literally running a program, a 4-month program, like May through to the end of August, called the Performance Project. And it is literally for girls that know what they're doing, can lose weight. Like, we're sort of, we've passed that point, but it's like, let's intentionally get out of the deficit for winter. Yeah. We're getting out of a deficit. You cannot come into this and spin your wheels with fat loss and all of the things. We are all committing to 4 months out of the deficit. And I think I've spoken about it with every single guest.
Yeah.
We're just saying the same story now, but it's because it's true. Guys, we're all saying the same thing. It's because it's
true. You got to get the point across. It's hard, right? But yeah, just give it a go. Like, what do you have to lose? Like, if that's what you want to do, or you want to feel a little bit better, like, don't diet on such low calories and starve yourself. But it's good that you're making that conscious effort, because it needs a change. Definitely needs a change.
Yeah, for sure. I love it. I love everything we've spoken about. It was really cool. Do you want to let everybody know where they can find you?
Yeah, sure. So so on Instagram, it's made_by_mac with 2 C's. I don't know who the person who's got the 1 C, but I'm coming after you. If you are interested in anything along those lines, have a look at some of the stuff I'm posting. And I'm sure somewhere down the track, Ruby and I will do some work together in regards to performance aspects that can help. That's me. I'm not on any other. I got like TikTok and stuff, but I can't be stuff with it. Instagram's the best point of contact. Any questions, shoot it through.
I love it. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate that.
No worries.